You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
You know, we love pairing athletes off against one another. Ali Frazier, Borg McEnroe, Bird Magic, Brady versus Manning. And sometimes a great athlete doesn't have a direct rival. Michael Jordan did not have a direct rival. We tried to boost some people up to be a direct rival. It didn't happen. LeBron James really hasn't had one either. Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson seem to be headed towards incredible careers. Right now, it appears as if Mahomes is in the LeBron-Jordan territory. That big matchup last night didn't really materialize. Mahomes was brilliant. Jackson struggled. But, you know, a couple things you have to keep in mind. Lamar Jackson's only 23. A lot of the great quarterbacks of all time probably didn't get their careers started till after they were 23. You know, they went to 4 years of college, came out. Not everybody started right away. You know, Tom Brady didn't start right away. Joe Montana didn't start right away. You know, it happens. And Lamar Jackson, last night, he was the other quarterback because Mahomes was brilliant once again. And you think of these two quarterbacks. We thought they were going to match up in last year's postseason. Didn't happen. But nothing creates a rivalry like a big moment, like the postseason. And they seem to be destined to meet again, even if Mahomes looks like he's well ahead right now. Jackson might get a shot at redemption in the playoffs in just a couple of months. And a couple of things stood out yesterday. Baltimore is so good when they get ahead. They're a great front runner. But Kansas City, if you don't get out on top of them early, then you're in trouble. And you saw that. You know, if you go down and you kick a field goal and then Kansas City comes down and scores a touchdown, then you're off to the races. Because you play behind with Kansas City, you play right into their hands. And Mahomes last night was wonderful. You know, when you're throwing for three touchdowns, you're running for a touchdown. He has not lost a game in September in his career. He's not thrown an interception in September in his career. 32 touchdowns, zero interceptions. He's 10-0 in the month of September. And here is Mahomes talking after the game. He had, you know, touchdown passes in a variety of ways. You know, it could be a long touchdown. It could be an underhand touchdown. It could be a tackle-eligible touchdown. But here's Patrick Mahomes after last night's win.
The first one, the Sherm, we actually had ran it my first year starting against the Patriots, and they had accidentally covered it because the guy was just following the ball. And so we kind of been hanging on to that one, trying to find the right opportunity. And I thought Coach Reed did a great job of calling it there on that down and distance and to get that touchdown.
And that's another thing to keep in mind. You have an offensive-minded head coach in Andy Reid. Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator. You've added weapons. The offense got better. And I think the defense has improved as well. Now, it's a long season. We know injuries are part of this. Baltimore will come back. You know, but they're not, I mean, they're fallible. If you look at this, if you're not going to throw for over 100 yards, you're not going to beat Kansas City. Just not going to happen. And that defense is supposed to be formidable. And they blitzed Patrick Mahomes. And I always go back to a conversation I had with Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner playing on the greatest show on turf team with the Rams. And I said, hey, you seem comfortable when you're being blitzed. He said, I love when I was being blitzed because I knew somebody was open. Baltimore went after him. They put pressure on him. But it's almost as if he knew it was coming, embraced that it was coming, and then took advantage of that. But Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, when they get behind, then they're in trouble. And they didn't get behind very often last year. When you have that sustainable drive and you take, you know, the pride from somebody, the air out of their sails, you go 80 yards. They did that last year. They had a number of drives to start games where they'd score a touchdown. And that was the big difference there. And I go back to the Super Bowl. You know, the 49ers thought that they were being able, they could put pressure on Mahomes. They didn't have to blitz anybody. And for three quarters, they put pressure on Mahomes, and he didn't play well at all. And then all of a sudden, you start to blitz, and then you're in trouble because Mahomes will eventually beat you. And that came to mind last night. If you can send four guys, you got a chance against him. But I don't know how many teams have a front four that's that strong to be able to do that. You know, maybe the Steelers could do that. But it's going to be rare to find that team to put pressure on them. And it almost feels like Kansas City will have to beat itself. When Mahomes was blitzed last night, 17 to 20, 240 yards, three touchdowns, and a quarterback rating of 156. It's about as good as it's going to get. And if that's where you go, we're trying everything we can possibly do, and we have no answers. Here is John Harbaugh, the Ravens quarterback, on the Ravens being a better team.
Well, obviously, we haven't beaten them. So, you know, they've outplayed us in all three games, if you want to go back for 3 years. So, but we didn't play well today. They beat us. They out-executed us. They out-game-planned us. They just beat us. So that's the story tonight. Big picture stuff, all that, I don't know. They're better, obviously. They're a better football team at this point in time. So you win or you learn, and we have a lot to learn from this game right here.
If you were with us yesterday at this time, Ross Tucker, a former NFL lineman.
Oh, no.
He covers the sport. And he sounded pretty sure. He was pretty sure that the Ravens were going to win this game and win this game comfortably. And here's the short version of his prediction on last night's game.
I really believe the Ravens run the ball down the Chiefs' throat tonight. I think they get after Patrick Mahomes. I think the Ravens have a great chance to win this game by double digits.
Okay. Now, he sounded confident. And I always look at it as for entertainment purposes only. Because here was the other thing. Now, I'm always curious, and having bet for so long, you can kind of feel what a line is going to be. What's the point spread going to be? And, you know, was it going to be 3.5 or 4 points last night? And then I said to Paulie, what's the over-under? And he goes, I start out at 52 on Sunday. It's up to 54. I go, 54. And then it went up to 54.5. So I'm thinking, people got to be jumping on this to do the over. And I always go the other way when I know, so, hey, everybody believes this. And then you start to go, How many points were scored last night, Paulie?
54.
Vegas did very well last night because most of the money was on the over.
According to a couple different sports books, at least 80% of the money that came in when it was at 54.5 was for the over.
Oh, that's painful. Painful. That's for entertainment purposes only, of course. Yes, Paulie.
Dan, we have a special guest calling into the Dan Patrick Show. Ravens backer, Mr. Monday Night Football in Westwood One, Ross Tucker.
Yes, yes, Rock. Ross, good morning.
Hey, Dan, first-time caller. I'm 6'5", 250.
Let's go back.
I need to come make amends. I went on my first appearance on Peacock yesterday. I kind of cocked off and said the Ravens would win by double digits. I don't know if you watched last night, Dan. Not exactly what happened.
Well, once again, let's play Ross's prediction, the short version.
I really believe the Ravens run the ball down the Chiefs' throat tonight. I think they get after Patrick Mahomes. I think the Ravens have a great chance to win this game by double digits.
Yeah. And I believed you, Ross.
I believe me too. That's the problem. I mean, this is why I get paid the big bucks. You know what? It is amazing, though, and it's one of the things I love about the sport. You watch those first two games. The Chiefs' run defense was terrible, and the Ravens were obviously running at will. And then Patrick Mahomes was under duress against the Chargers. I mean, he really struggled under their pressure, and the Ravens had just beaten the crap out of Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson. So I still feel real good about it. And then you watched the game last night, and I was very frustrated with the Ravens going away from the run as early and as often as they did. I mean, that first drive, they have 60 yards rushing on 6 runs, 10 yards a carry, and then 2nd and 3 from like the 12-yard line, 3rd and 3, they throw it both times, settle for a field goal. And then what Patrick Mahomes did on 3rd down last night, I mean, he was 10 of 12 for the 3rd downs that really mattered in the context of the game. And I think they were all 3rd and 5 or more, Dan. I mean, I don't know if people realize what we're watching right now. The Ravens have a good defense, and Mahomes was 10 of 12 on 3rd and 5 or more. I mean, he is unbelievable. I think I had tweeted at Ross Tucker NFL. By the way, DP show is getting a lot of love on Old Takes Exposed since I said that on your show yesterday. So you're getting the Old Takes Exposed crowd. But, yeah, man, I mean, look, I said I think the Ravens win by double digits unless Patrick Mahomes makes me look silly. And Patrick Mahomes did, in fact, make me look silly.
Ross, we appreciate you coming in with your head held low, tail between your legs. Very honorable on your part. We appreciate it, as always.
My pleasure. And I called in rather than Zoom because I don't need to have Paulie making fun of my head size anymore while my mom's watching. So thank you.
Thank you, Ross. That's Ross Tucker, Ross Tucker podcast. And also he's a Westwood One analyst. Yes, Paulie.
My sources say his mom has a perfectly normal size head. The dad has a big head, and that's where he got it from.
You start watching a game, and then you always think of, you know, somebody making a prediction or somebody sounding so confident, and then you wonder what they're doing while they're watching Mahomes throw all these touchdown passes. This program is brought to you by Home Depot, giving a call out to all you pros who are working hard every day. They've got delivery options to get you what you need exactly where you need it, so you can keep doing what you do to get the job done. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Come up with a poll question, play of the day, stat of the day as well. Lewis Riddick, who was on the call last night. Lewis Riddick got verbally spanked by Patrick Mahomes' mom because Lewis was calling Patrick Mahomes Pat Mahomes last night. And then his mom says, you know, I wish this announcer would stop on Twitter calling him Pat because her husband is Pat Mahomes, the former baseball pitcher. He's Patrick Mahomes. So he's not a junior. He's the second. But he doesn't go by the second, even though it's on his jersey. But Patrick Mahomes. So Lewis Riddick will join us coming up. The big news out of Los Angeles, Doc Rivers was fired. And the question is, why? Why now? Do you have a coach in place? Do you have Ty Lue as the heir apparent? Will he be the successor since he's on the bench with Doc Rivers? Doc Rivers is going to get another job. Does Kawhi Leonard, co-sign on this? Because if you want to keep Kawhi Leonard and Paul George after this season, I'm going to assume that they would want to know who their coach is going to be or have a say in that, a la Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving with Steve Nash in Brooklyn. But that's what came to mind immediately was I wasn't surprised that Doc got fired. And I think out of respect, Steve Ballmer, the owner, was going to wait a little while, probably wanted to, you know, take inventory there, talk to everybody. And then you got to be fair to Doc Rivers, who everybody loves. It's just the resume has not been outstanding. And now who are you bringing in? Can you bring in somebody that we probably didn't think of? Chris Mannix tweeted out, do you, you know, make a run at Phil Jackson? Phil's 75. And if you're Phil, Steve Ballmer says, what's it going to cost? Do you go to the Clippers? Can he do it physically would be my first question. Because I don't know if Phil physically would be able to coach an entire season. And how much of a difference would he make? Is that the kind of lineup that he wants? Do you do the triangle with? And I know maybe this is pie in the sky, but Mannix tweeted this out. I think Ty Lue is probably your coach there. And, you know, he's handled star players when he was with LeBron in Cleveland, winning a title there. He's already in-house, so I would think Ty Lue. And then Doc Rivers, you know, does he get New Orleans? Does he get Philadelphia? Does he get Indiana? There are possibilities out there for him. Yeah, Seton.
I just want to make one slight correction. Doc Rivers wasn't fired by the Clippers. They parted ways.
Oh, that's right. Now, how does that work again, Paulie? So
consciously uncoupled.
Yeah, so it's the Gwyneth Paltrow way of saying goodbye.
We're consciously uncoupling.
So if I walk in and I'm Steve Ballmer and Paulie is Doc Rivers, and I say, hey, Doc, how are you? I'm going to let you go.
I quit.
Now, did we do that? That was a mutual uncoupling
almost
there?
Exact timing.
Yeah. So then, once again, you walk in and I go, hey, Doc, how are you? I'm going to have to get rid of you.
And I'm gone.
Yeah, I'm going to fire you.
Hey, I don't think this is working. So agree. Not working.
Yes, Todd.
Was it a mystery early on whether he was fired or whether they parted ways together? Because the initial reports all kept using the phrase, he's out as head coach. And no one wanted to dive in further and explain whether he stepped down or he was shown the door.
I don't know if anybody wanted to say Doc Rivers got fired. I think that's what it came down to. Like, that sounds so like a guillotine. Like, Yeah, we decided, you know what, maybe we just, we're going to go in a different direction, separate directions. Two, he got fired. Yeah, boy.
And in our industry, you always see, looking forward to other challenges. It's like when someone leaves a entity, he's looking forward to other challenges.
Yeah.
You got fired.
McLevin, what kind of poll question are we looking at?
Okay, Paulie suggested this. Are you off the Ravens bandwagon?
Wow.
And my side poll question, are we going crazy overreacting to just a week 3 game? Everyone on Twitter is like, oh, the Ravens just lost the Super Bowl to the Chiefs.
Well, I think there is that feeling of, is anybody going to be able to stand up to the Chiefs? And if anybody, it's anybody, it'll be the Ravens. It feels like those are the two best teams in the NFL, not just the AFC. And we don't like a foregone conclusion, certainly not in football, where you want that process to play out. You don't want to go, yeah, they're going to win. Yeah, nobody's going to stop the Chiefs. That is that feeling today. But I have the Ravens winning the Super Bowl, so I'm not going to abandon ship. Yes, Paul?
I took a look around the internet, and there's different sites where you could see where different experts and betting people and commentators picked for the Super Bowl. And I'm trying to do the math here. More people picked the Ravens to make it to the Super Bowl than picked the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
Based off the picks I see.
Yeah.
I wonder if those people would want to do over today on their pick.
Well, I think when you look at Kansas City and realize that their offense is actually better, even though they lost one of their starting offensive linemen who opted out to work in the pandemic, the defense feels a little better. And that was always my big concern. Could they stop somebody when they needed to stop somebody? And that's what happened. You won a Super Bowl. They needed to stop the Niners. They stopped the Niners. They won a Super Bowl. Yeah, McLevin.
But this game was 27-20 in the fourth quarter, and there was like a key drop by the Ravens. Like, this was really close.
Did it feel that way?
Well, it felt in the second half that the Chiefs don't feel like they like being ahead. They feel like they were like, let's do some weird stuff and let Baltimore into this game. I had that slight feeling. Then Mahomes was on.
I thought it was closer than it should have been, because it felt like Kansas City was in control. And Baltimore, I don't think they did anything really well last night. Yeah, McLeod.
Well, Lamar ran well. He had 9 carries for 83 yards. Yeah. They can't stop him at all.
Yeah. But he doesn't know how to scramble. He knows how to run. When he faces pressure, he doesn't step up in the pocket. Like, he backs up. And he got caught a couple times last night. Yeah, Paul.
One single bettor at the MGM in Vegas, according to my guy, said a single bettor had $95,000 on the over at 54.5. You can buy down the over-under. You could buy points.
Yeah. And
did not do that. $95,000 on the over.
And that's one of those that just saying, hey, take it. Hey, the over. Of course they're going to score a lot of points. And then if Butker misses an extra point, the Ravens were down at the goal line and then lost like 20 yards on a play and then went for it, didn't even kick a – oh, man. See, this is why I don't gamble. Yes, Todd.
One of those bad beats if you didn't see that 54.5 coming.
Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome.
That sounds like a segment.
Oh, bad beats?
Bad beats.
So we take people who lost or games that didn't cover.
Yeah. Is anybody doing that?
I think I saw something late at night on one of those sports channels.
Yeah, but if it's late at night and we're doing this in the morning, then they'll never know.
You miss it.
Steal
you miss it.
AM, PM. It's different.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be, we should be able to do it. All right, let me take a break. Lewis Riddick will join us. And I got a question for you. Just let you think about this as we go into commercial break. What's a better sports city? New York or Tampa? Now, I never thought I would say that. But I can say that today. And I know the answer. It's obvious. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. He is Lewis Riddick, the ESPN Monday Night Football analyst. Although, Lewis, I think I got to call you Lou. Since you were calling Patrick Mahomes Pat last night.
Yeah, man. I
Yeah, his mom kind of said it straight, didn't she?
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Because I was on a roll, too, man. I love Patrick's game in so many different ways, man. I was just like, Pat this, Pat that, Pat. Next you know, I was like, oh, boy. All right, but no, it was fun. She was a great sport. It was cool, though. But I got the memo, that's for sure.
As a former defensive back, when you look at Mahomes, like how would you play him? Like what is it you see that you would try to defend?
Man, it's a problem, man. It's a problem. I think number one, from a pure defensive back standpoint, with the receivers he has, you have to slow them down at the line of scrimmage. You have to disrupt them as much as possible and make Pat have to hold the ball, and therefore give your defensive line time to get to him and make him uncomfortable. Just like the Patriots did in the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago. I mean, they absolutely got up on the line of scrimmage and beat those guys up as much as they could, and then Bill had a bunch of different rush schemes to get after Pat and made him uncomfortable. Now, he was young then.
Wait, Lewis, you're calling him Pat.
I know. See, there I go again. Patrick. Okay. You have to do that to him. You have to slow down his receivers and then get after him on the rush. If you don't do that, and Patrick is able to stand in the pocket uncontested, and his guys, who are all just speed burners, are able to get up on your secondary players just like that, he's going to cut you apart just like he did last night. I mean, here's the thing with Patrick now. He's taken his game from one level to the next because now, in his mind, he is able to decipher what you're doing much, much faster. And he admitted just a couple of years ago, just last year, he was still – pretty green as far as trying to figure out what you were doing. He was just reacting, you know, on God-given ability, which is scary. Now he's starting to get the answers to the test before they even snap the ball. And once he does that, as Steve Young says, it just becomes unfair. And that's what it looks unfair right now.
Yeah, I've mentioned this a couple times on the show. When Aaron Rodgers is playing at his peak, I don't think there's a quarterback who's made the game look easier than when Aaron Rodgers is playing at that high of a level. But Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson are creeping into that conversation. Is there a quarterback you went against that you just said he's making it look a lot easier than what it really is?
Yeah, I mean, look, when we played against, you know, guys like Marino and Elway. I mean, I played against those. I mean, I played against John Elway in 98 when they were just humming right along with Terrell Davis and Shannon Sharp and Rod Smith. And John made it look so simple because he knew what you were doing before you actually got to do what you were getting ready to do. And when you still have, you know, that cannon of an arm and you can put the ball wherever you want, I mean, it's just – it's tough. The only difference is back then, obviously, the intimidation factor was still a big part of defensive play in terms of how you can enforce the middle of the field and hit people. And, you know, the quarterbacks were protected, but it's not like it is now. Pass interference was still called, but it's not like it is now. So you still had some tools, you know, in your toolkit to deal with guys like that. But see, now – I mean, there's a reason, Dan. I mean, you see. I mean, there's a reason why the numbers as far as yards per attempt, yards per season, touchdown passes are going up. And when you have a guy like Patrick and you have a guy, you know, guys like Aaron and Russell, you know, who are really taking their game to a whole new level from a mental standpoint, when you have those kind of guys combined with their physical skills and then the rules the way they are, it just puts defenses in such a bad spot, man. I mean, If you're a premium defensive player right now, meaning you're the kind of guy who truly can come up with the PBUs and interceptions and make plays on the ball on a consistent basis, I would say that you probably deserve even more credit now than you would have back in my era in the 90s, because it's impossible to play high quality defense on a consistent basis.
He's Lewis Riddick, ESPN Monday Night Football analyst. They've got Falcons at Lambeau against the Packers next Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Was last night's game more about Kansas City or more about Baltimore, in your opinion?
It's a little bit of both. It really is. Look, I think with Kansas City, they knew that they have a lot of continuity on their coaching staff, a lot of continuity on their team. All the key players are back, and with Patrick leading the charge, I mean, you know that they're going to come out of the gates fast, and you expected them to have a good performance. I think with Baltimore, they expected to play much better. So on the downside, it's about them in the sense of, is this just a blip on the radar as far as when you're just kind of really focusing in on Lamar Jackson and his development, or are they not as far along? Is he not as far along as maybe people thought after the first 2 weeks and after the season he put together last year? We're going to see. He's going to just have to go back into the lab, so to speak, and figure out why was it that they couldn't get that passing game on track and or on track, and why he couldn't hit some of those deep shots that they were trying to call on the outside, because they were there. He just missed a few of them. And he has to hit those in order for this offense to get much better and for them to be able to score 21, 28, you know, 35 points in win shootouts like they had to, like they would have had the one win last night, in order for them to get to where they want to get to. And then on the flip side, too, look, their defense was exposed a little bit last night. It may be a one-off because Patrick is going to expose a lot of people like that. But we'll see. See, I mean, I'm just that whole Patrick thing.
You know what you do? You just call him Mahomes.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? But you know, I like the young man so much. I mean, he really is. And I say this, you know, not to distract from the guy. I mean, I'll call him Patrick. I'll get it right. But he is. He truly is, Dan. He truly is. He is a one of a kind individual, and I'm tight with a lot of those guys down there in Kansas City. They have hit a home run in ways in which I don't think they ever could have imagined.
They got a bargain.
Did they? I mean, you know, what he did, the way he made it look last night, it's like he was just playing, I mean, literally just playing a kid's game and having fun with it. It's ridiculous when it looks that easy. It really is.
And it takes me back to when I saw him at Texas Tech, and I had no idea. I'm not one of those guys who said, yep, I could see the greatness there.
Right.
I just remember coming in on a Monday and telling my guys, I said, you got to watch him. He's playing in the backyard and like pointing, like you go over there and you go over there, and he's putting up 40 points and a half against Oklahoma State. He wasn't winning. And I, you know, then I read all the draft reports and they're like, oh, too much of a gunslinger, you know, risk taker, like all of these things. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but think every time I watch him play, Lewis, I think of the Chicago Bears. Like, what if the Bears had drafted Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, they're thinking the same thing. And you know they are. Yeah. I mean, everyone's doing that to themselves. But I think it's the perfect marriage between he and Coach Reed and Coach Bieniemy, and the fact that they had Alex Smith there that could really help Patrick kind of get himself into a nice groove from a preparation standpoint on and off the field. He's naturally a good individual anyway. So he has that foundation and base as far as, you know, conducting himself like a professional. But they brought him along the right way. Brett Veach, the GM, really, you know, surrounded him with good players. They taught him the right way. And then they just kind of turned him loose. And him and Andy just have that nice rapport. And Eric Bieniemy and Mike Kafka, the quarterback coach. And it's just, the situation is so good for him, and he is so good for the situation. I mean, when you hit on things like that, I mean, that can just absolutely solidify your career as a coach, as a GM, as a quarterback coach. I mean, that rising tide is going to lift so many people down there, and rightfully so. It's a beautiful thing to see, because we've seen it happen on the flip side where situations are just bad, man, and they just ruin players and ruin coaches and ruin people's reputations because they can't hit it on the head the way they need to as far as striking that balance. So the people in Kansas City, enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. You've got a great situation.
I'll leave you with this. You had the Saints in Las Vegas last week. When you start to – like, when can you tell a quarterback has a tired arm or just doesn't have – not maybe doesn't have it or not willing to, you know, throw the ball 20 yards downfield, as we're now people starting to critique Drew Brees?
Yeah, I think it's when they start to lose that – I don't want to say courage, because all guys are courageous, really. I mean, to get to this level and be as good as Drew is. But when they start to really – choke it down and just want to get the ball out of their hand and not stand in there and maybe take that extra shot, either because, one, they don't want to take those hits anymore, or two, they just don't have the same horsepower in their arm. That's when you start to get the idea in your head that maybe they're not just quite the same anymore. They're not willing to take that risk, either because they're scared to, because they don't think they can get it there, or they don't want to, like, risk taking those hits in the pocket anymore. And I know it's early in the season with Drew, and look, he's one of the greatest of all time, so you don't want to jump the gun. But when you start seeing those things happen, and if they start happening on a repetitive basis, you're going to start asking those questions more and more and more. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt. You have to give Sean Payton the benefit of the doubt because they've been so good for so long. And remember, Michael Thomas isn't playing. So let's just see how this plays out. But the signs are starting to show up. And look, it's inevitable. It's going to happen to everyone. You just hope it's not so abrupt like it seems to be at this point in time with how, you know, he's struggling a little bit. But, you know, he's one of the ultimate pros. I'm sure he'll have an answer for this in due time.
Good to talk to you. Once again, congratulations on the gig there. We're talking to Louis Riddick, ESPN Monday Night Football analyst, Packers and the Falcons next Monday night from Lambeau. Louis, thanks for getting up with us.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Dan.
That's Louis. Don't call him Lou Riddick.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He is Keegan-Michael Key. He's actor, comedian, writer, producer. And he is an Emmy-winning actor who is narrating Drafted. It's a new docuseries podcast in association with iHeartRadio, Treefort Media, and Clutch Sports Group. What it does, it follows top college football players as they prepare to enter the NFL Draft. First two episodes launched just last Monday. Two new episodes releasing each week. He is the... Well, he's a Lions fan, too, and the Lions picked up a victory on Sunday. Do you want the Lions to do well? Or, like, they win when they're not supposed to win here, Key.
Right. No, I do want them to do well. I've wanted them to do well since I was 8 years old. But, yeah, they were not supposed to win that game, which I'm jubilant about. But the thing is that every season recently, the thing that you can hope the most for is that they play spoiler to somebody going into the playoffs. That's about as much as we've been able to. That's where we've been finding our happiness. So I do want them to win. I would love it if we were in a position to not have the third pick. I'm very excited about our pick this year, about Jeff Okuda, his first interception this last weekend, which was very exciting.
Break it down.
What's that?
Break it down here.
You know, very early. Right.
I love that. But, you know, when you start to – the Lions are one of the great untold stories. They're, you know, the Cubs ended up winning. Like, you have these franchises that have won. The Lions might be that last great story in the NFL.
I think they are. I think they definitely are. Part of me says I'm going to be impatient. Like, I'm going to be childlike and be impatient and say, oh, I want the winning to happen immediately. But God, Dan, would I be able to savor it? What if I was 82? You know what I mean? You know when you see those stories, those news stories, there's the old guy with the walker and the tears streaming down his face. Like, I never thought the Cleveland Browns. Well, I shouldn't mention the Cleveland Browns, but I never thought, we don't want to talk about something that's completely impossible. But some, wow. You know, I would love to be, I know, isn't that mean? They're not even in the NFC. Leave them alone, Keegan. But it would be great if I could just be that old man in the chair, you know, with like my old ball cap that's too big for my head going, we did it! We did, you know, surrounded by my grandchildren, that whole situation.
I was just telling the guys, recreating that story that you told when you go in that Monday and Peel was either playing Madden or watching football or just somehow heard DeBrickashaw Ferguson's name and how it was such a light bulb there. Like, you know, I remember DeBrickashaw Ferguson at like Virginia. Like I'm so accustomed to those names, but here's, you know, Jordan Peele, who's not a sports fan, and he's going, wait a minute. And then you're a sports fan, so you probably never looked at this and listened to this and went, oh, there's nothing. Wait, that's funny?
That's a football name. I'm like, what are we talking about here? I think I even said to Jordan, when he said, man, how is there a dude named DeBrickashaw Ferguson? And I said, wait a minute, first of all, I said, that's in the pros, Jordan. We haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg when you get to college. The names. And the funny thing is, to his credit and to his talent, he didn't even do any research when he wrote the rest of those names. He just made them up. The blueprint was DeBrickashaw Ferguson. I'm like, okay, I guess if you're going to use a blueprint, that would be the one. Either that, you know, or Barkevious Mingo. I mean, all he needed was to hear those two names, and he was off to the races, man.
I got one for you. This guy plays at Kentucky. Paulie?
Yeah, running back Kavassier Smoke.
Yeah. His last name is Smoke. Amazing.
Well, I'm okay with Smoke. Kavassier.
Kavassier, as in... That he must have come out of the womb a very sophisticated looking baby.
Kavassier.
For them to call him Kavassier. You know what I mean?
And he's got a brother, Hennessy.
Oh, my. Of course.
No, he does. I was joking about that. But.
Oh, I believe you 100%. When I was a kid, the big thing was that in my neighborhood, there were two kids named, I'm going to go the exact opposite direction on this. There were two kids named A and B Johnson. They were twins, and their names were A and B. And I'm like, you can't do that to a child.
I had some rough names that I grew up with, and that I can't even say them on the show.
Oh, jeez.
It's off color. And yes, but you know, you grow up and that's just the person's name. You don't even think twice about it. And then somebody goes, wait, you went to school with somebody named that?
Wait. Right, right. Exactly. Right. And I know you just kind of think to yourself, oh, that's just, you know, that's Giorgio or Giorgio. Not the craziest name. I went to high school. Now, here's another one. I went to high school with a gentleman by the name of Ignacio Hallhorn. Great name. I thought that was a great name because it sounded like he should have been in an old Dickens novel. Ignacio Hallhorn.
But you just call him Iggy?
Iggy, yeah, Iggy. Which is like, to me, one of the best nicknames ever, you know? It's like also a good Detroit nickname because Iggy Pop's from Detroit.
Oh, that's right.
I have to talk about at least 2 to 3 people who are from Detroit on every interview. Yeah.
Did you get in everybody you needed to get in?
I think I got everybody in. Oh, I just have to say Barry Sanders. I just have to say it randomly every time.
He's Keegan-Michael Key, and he's got a new podcast here. So are you working with LeBron's people on this?
Yes. The Clutch Media people. Yeah, that's who they're one of the producers of Drafted. And they're also repped by my agency. So we were collaborating, working together on this thing.
Have you hung with LeBron before?
I haven't. I have not even had the pleasure of meeting him yet. So,
well, how did you get involved in narrating this, where these are guys who are going to be drafted or the process of being drafted?
The producers, they came to me and asked me if it was something I'd be interested in. And I think they had already known that I had an interest in college football and in pro football. And the draft to me is always, you know, I think April is always a great time to have the draft because it's right in the midst of all of your yearning and longing for the new football season to start. It's so early, but it's long enough away from the Super Bowl that you're going, come on, man, it's with all these other sports now, when is the football coming? And so they had been put together by my agents with me, and they knew that I liked it. And I said, I'm 100% in, I'd love to do this. And it was such a unique situation because, you know, this year's draft took place during a very unprecedented time, and nobody was in the same room. Everybody was in their individual bubbles, but our producers sent microphones to all these players, and they got really honest, raw stories from these guys. And a lot of the time, the guys would walk around with their mics on. Sometimes they didn't know the mics were on. So you got really emotional moments with their family and their friends and talking to coaches on the phone. It was great. It was really, we got lots of fantastic footage.
What else are you working on?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in that mind of yours, you're probably got a million ideas here, but how do you get those ideas then down into paper and then kind of see a project through?
I always work with a writer. And a fellow writer, I always have to. I'm a partner person. So I had Jordan for years, and now my wife is my writing partner, and she's brilliant. But what happens is I'll come up with a general idea, or what you do is, like, when you start getting into a creative process, you'll finish a creative process. The way that you start a new one is by what I just call opening up the antenna. So you have to open up the antenna to notice absolutely everything, and then certain things will spark for you. And then those are the things that you try to drop in. And I'm very much kind of a bigger idea person. And I'll start writing down ideas, writing down themes, and then whoever I'm writing with, we start to come together so that they can go, well, what about this line? What about that line? And they kind of helped me hone down that bigger idea into a more specific idea. So that's what I did. But I did that with Jordan and do that with Elle, where I go, what about this? And then they go, and then what you do, Dan, is you just kind of start playing off of each other so that you just keep distilling down that bigger idea until it gets to what you want it to be. And that's been my process. That's been my process.
I brought up to the Danettes that I was watching a Key and Peele, and you were playing a doctor, and Peele was the gang leader, and you're explaining in doctor's terminology about his mom is sick and she's overweight. And then, you know, Jordan is firing back like you're dissing his mom. And it's like a rap battle going back and forth. And one of the great walk-off punchlines of all time that we can't say, but was there ever did all the episodes get greenlit? Like, did you ever have an episode that somebody says, no, you can't do that?
No, we actually, the Comedy Central was very liberal about that. They allowed us to do pretty much everything we wanted. The funny thing is the biggest issues we ever had with them was early on in the process of the show. We so badly wanted to do Star Wars sketches or like a Star Wars parody. And then one of the producers was like, no, 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 Star Wars. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Star Wars is our mythology. Star Wars is never not popular. He's like, I don't know, is popular Star Wars right now? Should we do Star Wars? I'm like, there's only 6 Star Wars movies out right now. You're right. It's not in the zeitgeist. But that was the only thing they ever fought us on were these Star Wars scenes. But the thing is, we had scenes that we pitched to Comedy Central, Dan, where they were like, yeah, sounds good. Like, oh, don't you think it's a little... No, that's, hey, go for it, man. If you guys want to be on the edge. Yeah, we were just, thought you were going to say no. Okay, so, and then you have to make it. Then you've got to make the sketch. So they never, ever pushed on subject matter. They were always like, go for it. Go for it. Jordan, I remember he had some trepidation about, if you remember the slave auction sketch.
Yes.
He was like, I don't know. I just wanted to, because it was kind of an exercise. I wanted to see if I could do something that would make slavery funny, or I could find a way to do that. And then we pitched it and he got nervous. And then they greenlit it. They're like, go ahead and shoot it. And he was like, huh. But you know, it turned out to be one of our more memorable sketches at the end of the day.
Oh, didn't you have the kind of a rap battle between, was it Malcolm X and Martin Luther King? And
yes, yeah.
And you're trying to get the crowd on your side here,
yeah,
by saying shocking things there. And you know, Martin Luther King's doing it his way, and then Malcolm X is doing it his way, and then...
Yeah, well. And then all of a sudden, the next thing I do, I'm doing the worm on the ground, trying to get the crowd. By the way, a little tidbit, first time I'd ever done the worm,
yeah,
or attempted to do the worm. I just dropped to the ground. I was just trying to outdo Jordan. And then the director goes, cut. And I get up, I go, all right. First time I've ever done that in my life.
One and done.
Does anybody have some ice for my back? So it was like just...
Are you working on movies?
Doing a TV show or like a limited series right now for Apple Plus. I'm in Vancouver right now, and it's a musical. This is actually, by the way, my third musical, in the last year. I've done 2 other that I'm not allowed to talk about right now, but I did, you know, I did, like a lot of kids who are actors or drama geeks, you grow up, you do musical theater in high school, and I did that for years, and I used to sing in a band. And somebody came to me and said, would you like to do this musical, a year and a half ago? And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I haven't sung in a while. So that's kind of been a thing I've been doing recently, which has been a lot of fun.
How often do you sing? Like,
I sing a lot, actually. I sing.
But you were in a band? What kind of band were you in?
It was the early 90s, and it was like a cover. I was in a cover band. I used to perform at Grounds Coffee House on the campus of University of Detroit Mercy, my alma mater. And we'd go to Grounds Coffee House and sing, you know, like Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I wore a t-shirt that I can't say what the words were on the t-shirt. But I, you know, Dan, that whole deal, like I wore a flannel shirt tied around my waist, but never actually wore the shirt just for it. Remember in the night? Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Vedder? The shorts, the combat boots, and the flannel shirt. Oh. But you don't wear the flannel shirt. You just have it there just in case. You know, rainy Seattle. Yeah.
In case your wife or girlfriend needs, you know, she's cold.
That shirt, right.
Right there.
And I was in two bands, but it was like Parliament Funkadelic, where both bands, same guys, two different names. So one band was called Free Love Lemonade, and the other band was called Trip Master Monkey. Those were the names.
Of course.
Of the band.
Of course.
What else? 1992.
Of course. Did you ever meet, you know, George Clinton?
I never met him. I'm going to do it again. The first two albums, the first two or three albums that Funkadelic ever released were made in Detroit. They were recorded in Detroit. And but I always wanted to meet him, and I never have. I've seen him in concert a few times, but I've never met him.
Yeah, little Atomic Dog, you know, you should be.
Oh, yeah, Atomic Dog. Yeah. George Clinton said, what did he say? He was on an interview one time, and someone said to him, do you think that, do you believe that any kind of illicit drug like LSD influenced your career, your music? And George Clinton said, hey, man, I think I influenced LSD. Just a baller answer.
That is great. Isn't there a line in that song where he goes, chase the cat? Like it's just.
Why must I be like that? Why must I chase the cat? Ain't nothing but the dog in me. It's just like.
Great to talk to you, man. Have fun in Vancouver. Good luck with the podcast there, and great to connect with you again.
You too, Dan. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Mike. That's Keegan-Michael Key. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Chris Mannix, the senior Sports Illustrated writer covering the NBA, joins us on the program. The big question here, Mannix, is how surprised are you the Clippers let Doc Rivers go?
You know, surprised, not shocked. You know, the disappointing way with which the Clippers ended their season. There were a lot of people that I talked to throughout the NBA that wondered if Doc Rivers was going to survive. You know, it was pointed out to me by several different league types that he had taken that team exactly as far as Vinny Del Negro had taken that team, never being out of that second round. And to blow a 3-1 lead for the second time, it begged the question. I did think because of the whole bubble environment that, you know, Doc would get a chance to run it back. Remember, you know, this team before the pandemic hit, Dan, had won 8 of the last 9 games going into the break. They were starting to play their best basketball of the season. Then the bubble hits. They have all sorts of problems in Orlando. I thought that would all be factored in and Doc would get another chance. But Steve Ballmer, who had his fingerprints all over this, ultimately decided to go in a different direction.
Do you think the Clippers know who their next coach will be?
I don't. You know, largely because of the length of this process. If they had let go of Doc 2 days, 3 days after the end of the season, I might have thought they had a plan in mind. As it stands, it took almost 2 weeks for them to agree to part ways, which suggests there were some, you know, some internal conversations there. I mean, I noted, you know, in a piece I wrote for SI.com that, you know, Lawrence Frank's name was nowhere near this. Lawrence Frank is the team president. You know, usually the team president makes decisions like this. This was all attributed to Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers. So, I mean, I think they have some ideas and we can talk about them, but I don't think they have a clear successor in mind.
Because you have Ty Lue there on the bench and he's a viable candidate for a couple of openings there, but can he be part of, you know, the positive here, or was he also part of the negative here as well?
Well, Ty Lue makes the most sense because going into what is likely going to be either a shortened season or certainly a season that has a lot of issues going into it with the pandemic, you probably want to try to have as few bumps along the way as possible, as smooth a transition as possible. And Ty Lue being there all season long would make it a relatively smooth transition from one coach to another. The question I have about Ty Lue is that would he want to take this job? Now, Ty has been elevated to a job before, of course, you know, taking the job after David Blatt was fired in Cleveland. But this is an entirely different situation. Doc Rivers is Ty Lue's mentor. Doc Rivers is the guy that brought Ty Lue into the fold this year and made him one of the highest paid assistant coaches in basketball. So would Ty feel differently about assuming Doc's chair than he would taking David Blatt's spot? That's something I and other people across the NBA have wondered as this sort of plays out.
And I also wondered, too, I wasn't surprised at all that Doc was fired. I think that we really like Doc. But if you look at his resume with the Clippers, you know, he hasn't performed up to the standards of an elite coach. And then you look at Paul George and you look at Kawhi Leonard, and they got one more year there before they can be, you know, free agents here. Do they have to co-sign on this? Does Steve Ballmer say to Kawhi, I'm going to do this? Or I don't know if they're brought in a decision-making role here.
Well, all-star players have some role in the hiring of a coach. We just saw that with Steve Nash being hired in Brooklyn, you know, effectively getting Kevin Durant's seal of approval with that team. It's just a question of how involved they get in the process. So I do believe Kawhi Leonard and Paul George will be brought into this process, and they'll be given a chance to voice their feelings and their thoughts on who the next head coach is. All that being said, Dan, and this is more me, my opinion on this, I look at the Doc Rivers firing as a staggering overreaction at this point. I get what you're saying about how his teams have underachieved in the playoffs. I mentioned the two blown leads in the postseason. But this was such a unique environment, yeah. And this was such a difficult situation to succeed in. I mean, it was difficult for everybody, not the least of which was the Denver Nuggets, who had similar problems to the Clippers. But the Clippers came into the bubble with like half a team. They went through their seeding games with Montrezl Harrell in and out, Patrick Beverley in and out, Lou Williams, the whole Magic City thing with him. Harrell didn't play his first game until they got to the postseason. Patrick Beverley missed all but one game of that first round. I mean, there are no excuses for blowing a 3-1 lead, but I don't know how you look at this this experience and what happened. The bubble is saying it's proof positive that Doc Rivers can't coach this team. I would actually look at what the Clippers were doing pre-pandemic, when load management seemed to be working for them, when the team seemed to be peaking at just the right time. That, to me, is a stronger reason to bring Doc Rivers back than what happened in the bubble to fire him.
He's Chris Mannix, senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. You floated out the idea that maybe the Clippers do a drive-by with Phil Jackson. You think Phil is physically capable of being a head coach in the NBA?
I think that's the biggest question. 75 years old, just turned 75 this month, has dealt with myriad health issues over the years. Can his body hold up to the rigors of an NBA season? I think that's the first and foremost question that would have to be answered when it comes to Phil Jackson. But other than that, Dan, it does make a lot of sense to at least kick the tires on Phil Jackson. I mean, how many coaches out there are proven to have won at this level, who can take over teams with star players and succeed at the highest level? I know a lot of people say the triangle is outdated in today's NBA game. I disagree. I think that Phil's offense can work in today's NBA game. And I think a guy like Kawhi Leonard could actually thrive in it in the same way Kobe Bryant thrived in it with the Lakers. And if you're Phil Jackson, isn't this job a little bit appealing to you? Aren't there reasons to go and take this job, Dan? I mean, Dan, it's been like a decade. I know that relationship with Jeannie Buss is still strong, but a decade ago, the Lakers didn't exactly, you know, throw Phil a retirement party on his way out the door. It didn't end in the most positive of ways with the Lakers. Phil's comfortable living in LA, being in that environment. And Phil, even though he's the all-time leader in championships, can do something, or at least have the opportunity to do something with the Clippers that no other coach has done. And that's win three championships with three teams as a head coach. So if you're Phil Jackson, you know, your body's first and foremost, but if it can hold up and the Clippers call, I'd make a run at him.
And it doesn't help the Clippers situation that the Lakers are four wins away from another title.
No, it doesn't. But if you're Phil, doesn't that add a little bit more fuel to the fire? Like, the Lakers might be the champion this time next week. they're going to be looking to run it back next year with the same group. The chance to walk into Staples Center and win the championship. Like, Dan, you know Phil Jackson. You've talked to him over the years. I know him a little bit. I've talked to him over the years. You can't tell me that this possibility is not at least a little bit appealing to Phil Jackson. There are other variables. Like, I don't know how he and Jerry West would ever get
that
organization.
That was another question, because Jerry and Phil, that didn't end well either.
It didn't, but I mean, Jerry's not the general manager with that team. He's influential, but he is more of an advisor at this stage and a well-paid one at this stage. But it's not like he's running the organization. I think, look, if you're Steve Ballmer and you're not convinced that Ty Lue's the guy, and you're not convinced Jeff Van Gundy's the guy or somebody else that you have in mind, you've basically got a blank check that you can write your head coach. Why not take the Microsoft jet up to Montana and see what Phil Jackson's thinking?
How do the Heat win the finals?
I mean, I throw out to a degree the 2-0 record in the regular season, because those games were played without Jay Crowder, without Andre Iguodala, who both acquired the trade deadline. Tyler Hero was playing behind Kendrick Nunn at that point of the season. There were very early games in the season. So I don't look at that as being a variable. I do think that the fact that Anthony Davis has dominated Bam Adebayo in these matchups is a factor. Davis has averaged close to 30 points per game against the Heat, shot about 60% from the floor against the Heat, where Adebayo has gone the completely opposite direction. He has about 11.5 points per game, are the second lowest against any team in the NBA during the season. How they win this series is if Adebayo can even up that matchup, if he can play the way he played against the Celtics. I think Crowder and Iguodala can cause some problems for LeBron. I think that zone defense, if they throw it at the Lakers, can cause some problems for some of those shooters. But if Anthony Davis plays the same way against Bam Adebayo as he did during the regular season, Adebayo vice versa, could be a quick series for Miami.
Always great to talk to you, Chris. Thank you.
You got it, Dan.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.